You've heard me mention a lot of times now when we get to our seasons, Advent, Christmas, Lent, Easter, that our strong seasons of those are called have a very intentional structure to them as the church lays them out for us and for our annual prayer. Very true on the readings that we hear and the prayers that we get to meditate upon. Very true in Lent. So the roadmap for Lent goes as follows. Every year, first Sunday of Lent, from Matthew, Mark, or Luke, we hear about the temptation of the Lord. We just did. Next Sunday on the Transfiguration of the Lord from Matthew, Mark, or Luke. So that's coming up next weekend. There's a reason why that is. We'll get to that next weekend. And then Sundays 3, 4, and 5 of Lent, the middle portion, always rotate by theme depending upon the year. This particular year is the baptismal cycle. It's called themes of light and darkness, living water, death and resurrection, with wonderful gospels from John about the woman at the well, the man born blind, and the raising of Lazarus. All that is ahead. Great things to pray with. So for today, to understand why we hear about the tempting or the testing of the Son of Man and how it applies to us to get us started on our roadmap and our journey, maybe a little bit about the context of this gospel story and why Matthew, Mark, and Luke were so interested in preserving it and passing it along, what it means for them and for us. And then when we get the context, maybe we can know a bit about how it applies to our own life today, so many years later. In terms of context, scripture scholars would often say that the better way to explain the story is not so much to call it a tempting, but rather the testing. The Son of Man is tested in this little scene that we hear about in the gospel. Why is that? Where does that come from? So understand that right before this is chapter 4 we hear from in Matthew, right before this, in Matthew, Mark, and in Luke, all of them, Jesus undergoes his baptism. It's the beginning of his public ministry, so he passes through the waters. And as soon as that happens, each of the Gospels explain that the Father speaks and declares him as the Son. This is the Son, we are told, once he passes through the water. Once we learn that he is the Son, the next question becomes, what kind of Son is he? Because in Israel's memory, they know as a nation that for centuries and centuries, they were also called God's Son. Israel is my Son, God would say, through the prophets, through the Psalms, through the writings of the Old Covenant. So if we know that there is this Son who has come through the waters, like the Israelites passed through waters once upon a time in the Exodus story, the next question is, well, is this Jesus going to be a faithful son or a disobedient son, like Israel often was through all of its history? How does God figure out through all of Israel's history their obedience? He tests them. Before the exile happens, he tests them himself. There's various things in the Old Testament that bring about this idea of how strong is their covenant faith and their commandments, or their lack of commandment fidelity, is how this is often shown. Once the exile is passed, God permits the tester, or the devil, or Satan, to tempt and test his people. So Job would be a classic example. And in those cases, they know that the devil's power is limited, that God ultimately has control of the situation, but he permits this for a reason. It is to unearth in his chosen people, his son, the depth of their faith, so that it can be brought to light and be deepened if it needs to be. So Jesus passed through the water, he's called God's Son, and immediately, like the son Israel before him, he goes out to the wilderness, like they were in the wilderness a long time before him, and he is tested like they were tested. And he faces similar tests in the case of the bread temptation or testing in this story. This goes back to the manna in the desert for the Israelites who grumbled about their food, who wanted food, and God said, you live in my word, not just bread. Jesus passes that test. There is the test here going up to the Temple Mount and God saying, toss yourself off. The devil saying, rather, toss yourself off. And Jesus says, I will not test God. The Israelites tested God at the waters of Meribah years earlier. Jesus passes this test where the other ones failed. There is a test at the end from the tempter, from Satan, to say to him, worship me and I'll give you all these kingdoms. That goes back to the golden calf story where they worshiped the golden calf and they worshiped false gods through all their history. So Jesus passes this test too. So long story short, what Matthew, Mark, and Luke are trying to show is this son is different. Where the son of Israel had failed up to this point, this son of man is faithful, obedient, and loyal to his father and to the covenant. This has shown his identity. It's about who he is. not such about pass-fail. That's not quite what's going on here, right? It's about them bringing to light the identity of the Son of Man, okay? So that's what's going on in the story and why Matthew, Mark, and Luke thought it's so important. We have to know who the Son is. And then once he has been shown to really be the faithful Son, he can go out and start to preach. And he can teach with authority, and he can drive out demons, and he can heal, and he can feed, and he can relive their experiences the right way. And ultimately, he becomes the Son who's offered up on the cross, so we can trust his identity and his power over sin and even over death. The story sets the foundation. We can trust this Son better than anybody else. We can rely on his power because he demonstrates it so clearly in the wilderness and all that follows after. Knowing the context, therefore, what about us? Are we in the story? Similar line of events. Everybody here, I think most of us anyhow here anyway, are baptized. We have passed through the waters. Like the Exodus once upon a time, like the Jordan for the Son Jesus, when we pass through the waters, we become by adoption, in real actual fact by adoption, a son or a daughter of God the Most High. At a baptism, God declares, "You are my son. You're my daughter. You're joined to the Son of Man." Once we pass through the waters and become adopted sons and daughters, then just like the Son of Man in the story, we are now free to be acted upon by God. He can now test us too, like he tested his son Israel and like he tests the Son of Man who is Jesus. So we too are tested, no? We're tested not because God doesn't like us. On the contrary, he loves us so much, he can't leave us where we're at. He must deepen our faith. And so think about this from our perspective. We test things all the time, do we not? Teachers give tests to their students because how else does one raise up what they know or don't know? We test equipment. We test processes. We do stress tests on heart patients. What else is going to bring to the surface whatever is lacking, weak, wrong, or deficient, but putting it under strain somehow and letting things get stretched by the person or system in front of us, it raises up whatever needs deepening. That is why God permits testing. And just like in the case of the Son of Man, if in fact Satan is the tester and tempter, and our theology says it is true, we can know that his power is limited, that God permits this and doesn't let us go through anything we cannot handle. All the Old Testament testing was what they could handle. Same thing for the Son of Man. Same thing for our tests. They are what we can handle, and we should know this as an act of faith. What about our wilderness? Jesus goes in the wilderness. What about our wilderness experience where the testing takes place? A wilderness related to testing is any zone or reality or circumstances in which we find our faith being stretched, pushed. We're put on the breaking point a little bit. We find ourselves asking God the question, why? I don't understand this. I might be led to doubt. I might be led to question. I might be led to be unfaithful. I might be made aware of my inadequacies or that of my family or my community or some social system. So the wilderness, our deserts, are any place we find ourselves having to wrestle with the reality of our trust in God. It happens throughout life all the time, doesn't it? All this stuff tests us. There are, you might say, wilderness of our own making and wilderness that come to us or we're sent into almost against our will. Both of them have a place. Wildernesses of our own making, that would be Lent. Lent is designed to be a time when we intentionally, like Jesus, fast and pray and do our almsgiving because it creates a wilderness around us. The fasting, the prayer, and the almsgiving makes us realize that we depend upon God alone. And it raises up for us our weaknesses and puts us on our knees and shows the limits of our power so that things can be brought to light in us. There's nothing harder than trying to get through a day or a week or a month when we're fasting from things because we get tired and we get crabby and we get our comfort foods and comfort devices taken from us. We start to get down to the essence of what's my strength really when I'm not medicating myself all the time. Then things come forth, don't they? That's a real wilderness experience. Lent is designed to be, by the church's wisdom, a self-imposed wilderness to get at our weak points and raise them up. Then there are the tests and wildernesses that come to us. things in a marriage, things with our health, things in a family, things in the culture, things at a job, things that just push us or pull us or make us wonder or make us question. There is, if I may say it, you know, the worldwide test right now, the wilderness, so to speak, of the corona situation and the economic meltdown the last week. I mean, surprise. We learn in a hurry how fragile we actually are. We think that we're so puffed up and strong, it takes a few short days to show us, no, you're not. No, you're not. This is a test in certain respects. It's a trial of faith. Nobody enjoys it at all. I completely agree. So they come to us in lots of ways, shapes, or forms, right? So in all these ways, okay, we follow the story of the Son of Man. We pass through the waters, we're named sons and daughters, we are tested by the God who loves us, because he doesn't want to leave us where we're at. He wants to raise up for us the things that are weak and things that need mending. And maybe we follow these specific temptations too in the gospel story, the bread thing, right? We're often so tempted to rely on material things. We think that what's going to make me secure is what's on my dinner table or in my bank account or the car that I drive or the equipment I have on my desktop. We think all this stuff makes us strong, like bread. God says, no, those things are temporary, they're helpful, but my word alone sustains you when all that stuff is taken away. Again, witness the economy right now. It all just got taken away, just like that. What about the temptation to worship false gods? We do it all the time, don't we? Fame, data, I worship results, I worship processes, I worship expectations, I worship status and other people's opinions of me. Those are all false gods. And God says, don't follow those things. They don't bring you happiness. They might be helpful to a point, but they're not going to make you joyful. And then there is putting God to the test. Throw yourself off the temple top. See if God will catch you. This is every time that we put conditions on God. God, I love you, but if you do this. I'll pray to you, but if you give me that. I want this, you must give it to me. If you don't, I'll be mad at you. That is testing God in its own way, shape, or form. So we do this all the time, right? So to this point, we have followed the sequence of the Son of Man almost exactly. It's our story. There is, though, a departure in the pattern, in the parallel, it will go like this. The reason why God tests us in the wildernesses that we create, Lent, or imposed upon us, you pick the one, we all know what they are, it's not to show God what our weaknesses are. He knows them anyway. He is fully aware of my weaknesses, believe me, and yours. He raises them up and puts them in front of our face through these tests and trials so that we can see what they are. He wants us to see them as he sees them. And then once they're in front of us, and here's the departure from the gospel story, because Jesus was perfect, we are not. Once my weaknesses are in front of me, once our family's weaknesses are in front of me, once our cultural, societal, economic, health, scientific weaknesses are in front of us, whatever, we have a choice. And here's what makes Lent so fruitful, potentially. Once I know my weaknesses, I can react in two ways. I can get mad at them. I can despair over them. I can be frustrated at them. I can think that I'm useless and my life has no meaning and I'm a failure as a husband, wife, parent, pastor. We all go through this little despair cycle at times in life. I can react the wrong way to the fact that I'm not perfect, and God knows it. Or the right way is to look at this gospel story, look at the cross, and realize I can give my weaknesses to somebody else. I can hand them over. I can say to God in sincerity of my prayer once I confront him with my failures, Lord, I now realize the limits of my power. I realize the limits of my ability, that I am frail, I am fragile, that I depend upon you, and I'm going to hand you my issue and say to you, Lord Jesus, you have to help me with this. I can't fix this. I can't fix myself. I can't fix my family. I can't fix my world. I'm going to choose not to despair about it. Instead, I'm going to give it to the one who has triumphed over all of it already, who is rock solid, reliable in the covenant, faithful Jesus, who is God's Son, who has died for me and for you. The identity of this gospel reading breeds confidence in his power to fix what I can't fix about myself or anybody around me. And there's a lot of it. I'm not a perfect person. You know that about me. We're not perfect people. Once we realize that, we say, maybe I need Lent. Maybe I need the gospel. Maybe I need confession. Maybe I need the sacraments. Maybe I need prayer. I certainly need God. How does God react when we hand him our weaknesses? Does he sit there with arms folded and this deep laugh saying, forget you, you're a failure? No. He is eager to help us. In the first reading, Adam and Eve, they make the mistake of thinking God didn't want to help them. They could do it all on their own, that they could be independent. That's false. God is eager to come to the assistance of weaknesses, eager to help us with our flaws, eager to rush to our defense, eager to fix, eager to mend. We are the ones who push him away and tell him, I don't need your help. But he wants to help. So bottom line, long story short, as I always say, right? We should not be afraid of tests. We should not be afraid of the wilderness. We should not be afraid of things raised up in front of us that aren't pleasant to think about or contemplate or face. We should not be afraid of that if we know what we can do with them. If I think I got to solve my own problems, I'll be afraid of that. If I know he wants to solve them for me, I won't fear that. I will give them to him. And I will trust that he tests me because he loves me and wants me to grow. He says to all of us, you're my son, I love you, my daughter, I love you, and I'm not content to leave your faith where it's at, it must deepen, and I'll bring out of you what is the best, but this is how you're going to have to do it, pass through trials, and then give your failures when you realize them to me, and together we will fix it. Not you by yourselves alone, that doesn't work. Together, God says, we will fix it. That's the promise of the gospel, and it's awesome. So do not be afraid of temptations, he tells us, or the wilderness, or of Lent, or of life itself. As it comes at us, self-imposed or otherwise, let's hand to him and let him, the divine master physician, fix all that needs mending, all that is broken, and raise it to the glory of the new life he promises us in the gospel.